Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hi, thanks everyone for coming to watch us. I'm Justin. I run Diving Bell here with the rest of the team that sat right there, which is slightly awkward. And we are a talent agency. We're very purpose-led. We've done probably over 1,000 deals now in the sort of purpose-led, where the intersection of talent, brands, activism have all collided. And it's been a bit of a mission of mine and my co-founders, Kim, to try, outside of all the commercial work we do, to try and kind of educate our industry a little bit from the inside. We're both cis white het co-founders, and I think we've tried to listen as much as we can to various communities we've worked with, and clients of ours, to try and educate ourselves as much as possible and pass that on as kind of gatekeepers within our industry. So I think today we'll talk a bit about that, but also just generally the benefits of being brave in the sort of work that you guys do on the various collaborations you do. One of my clients, I'm really proud to say, is Munro. We met 6 or so years ago.
Seven.
This is will happen a lot. I was sent a link to Munro. Some of you might have seen this, having a Barney with Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain. And I was completely blown away. Kim and I just started deciding we were going to do our own thing as a business. We had a bit of experience in this industry already. And I was absolutely blown away by her. I found her so enigmatic. I know this is weird because you're sat there. So articulate, very brave. And I could also tell she didn't necessarily want to be in that room. Well, I mean, I don't think many people want to be.
So. Who does want to be in a room with Piers Morgan, yeah. To be honest? So.
Which kind of made it even more profound. So I tracked your details down. A couple of days later, we met in Costa in Brixton, no longer there. And we started working together by the end of that conversation, I think. And that time, just for context, the landscape was a little bit different to how it is now. This is pre-Black Lives Matter, pre-pandemic, pre-Me Too. And so Kim and I trying to build this business and support someone like Munro in this space, it was, it's still not easy, but it was even more difficult, I would say, then. There has been a lot of progress, but I still think we got a long way to go. And I still think brands need to understand how much there is to gain from being there in that space and thinking a little bit further forwards. So in that time since we've been working together, Munro has achieved various things, probably too many to list now, but she is now the contributing editor at Vogue. She's a Vogue cover star. She's a documentarian. She's a podcaster. She is a doctor of letters. Probably some awards. There's so many awards. And so can we give a quick round of applause to Munro?
Thanks for having me.
This is also strange because we haven't done this before. I usually come here, stand at the edge and go on then, and I go and sit somewhere and have a coffee, and slightly weird to be the one doing the questions, but we'll see how it goes. So, Munro, brave. What do you think, what are we talking about when we say brave collaborations, and why is it important that we're even having that conversation?
Hi everyone, how are you doing? Thank you for having me today. So I was thinking about what it means to be brave when I was brushing my teeth this morning, getting ready for this. And I think that the concept of bravery really splits in two, depending on who's being brave. If you look at a lot of the changes that have happened within, say, the fashion and beauty space over the last 10 years, 5 years. I mean, I often think of Edward Enninful with British Vogue. I'm very lucky that he's one of my mentors along with Justin. And and the change that he's made, I wouldn't necessarily say that there's like a bravery in the same way as if he was a cis straight white man. I think that the risk that a cis straight white man would be taking is almost like it's seen differently. It's like minorities in positions of power, we often just reflect the world in the way that we see it. So our bravery is just us being. But like when you take a change in a direction that's unexpected is obviously is seen differently. But I think also with bravery, we need to think about what are we doing here? Are we going to the hill? Are we, you know, wanting to make change, or are we providing an image of change? And so often we just see people almost provide the image of change, but not necessarily, you know, follow through with it. And that does essentially take a radical mindset and working with marginalized communities rather than just putting them on a stage and taking the image and, you know, allowing them to do their thing. And I think that that's why we work together so well, is because it's a partnership. And all of the partnerships that I have participated in, it has been a collaboration, whether that could be consultancy or it can be, you know, going the extra mile behind the scenes. So loud in here, isn't it, guys?
Someone's having a good time.
But it's really a partnership. So I think one of the most important things that we can take away as people that, you know, work, I do a lot of work behind the scenes with consultancy for like brands like L'Oreal and another brand that I can't talk about just yet, but that's coming out in a couple of months. And it's really not just, you know, putting me in front of the spotlight and allowing me to just say it, because what if that goes wrong? You know, I've worked with brands before and they've given me the opportunity, but when, you know, shit's hit the fan, it's really, you know, me on my own, because the brand isn't prepared or doesn't understand the conversation that they've wanted to be part of. You've wanted a trans person as the face of your brand, but you haven't necessarily thought about the transphobia that comes as a result of that. You want a black person on the front of your magazine, but you haven't thought about the reaction, the racism that we have within this society. So it's really preparation, it's partnership, and it's also just understanding the nuance of what you really want. Do you want to make change, or do you want just the veneer of it?
It's almost like we're still kind of in the nascent stage of going into those partnerships now. There was a big explosion of it, but almost in quite a reactive way. And now people are learning how to actually make it successful for everyone involved and think maybe further ahead.
It's asking why, like, why brave?
Yeah.
You know? Like, inequality, yes, but why is there inequality? Like, kind of, you want like equality, but why is there inequality? You know, it's really kind of digging a little deeper than just saying diversity and then that's it. It's kind of, well, let's have a conversation about homophobia, transphobia, racism, and where that also comes from.
And that's where the conversation probably start rather than the other end. I thought we should get cancel culture out of the way early, if you're right with that. I mean, I'll be honest, I kind of know what Monroe's thoughts on this, but I thought it'd be good to chat about. What are your thoughts on cancel culture, and how should brands be terrified of cancel culture when they're working with people, and what does it mean?
Well, I mean, I don't think that cancel culture is the cancel culture that the people who speak about it. I don't mean that doesn't make any sense. I don't think that cancel culture is what it is described as a lot of the time. I think that really when people speak about cancel culture, they're actually talking about accountability. And I think that as people who are putting things into the world, there needs to be a sense of responsibility. There needs to be a willingness to be held to account when it goes wrong, or if it isn't accurate, or if it could be better. I think there needs to be an openness to understanding that is what people are doing. If you're being boycotted, or if people are pushing against what you've put out there, there's usually a good reason for it. People don't just do it for fun. So I think it's really about listening and understanding where these people are coming from. The worst thing that you can do is ignore the crowd. The worst thing that you can do is bury your head and hope that it's going to go away, because it won't. Brand reputation is everything, especially to the younger generations who want to know not just why you're doing something, but also as intricate down to the paper trail, the money trail of your company. They want to know where your company is invested.
Gen Zers do like to do their
digging. They're forensic. And they should be, because that is really how we change the world. Even down to, you know, the what we're seeing right now with their institutions of learning. You know, they want to know where their university is investing their money in. They don't want to be part of the negative things in the world, because they have been born into a world that is overwhelmingly negative, and a planet that's dying, a society that's collapsing, public services that are, you know, on the brink of collapse. They want to see change. So when you're putting something out into the world, it's really about making sure that that is in tandem with the DNA of your company. So yeah, cancel culture, I don't necessarily think that cancel culture is what it is being presented as. Yeah, I think the real cancel culture is, you know, the government trying to make it harder to exist as a trans person. The real cancel culture is, you know, young black kids being stopped and searched, and
students, you know, being stopped from protest.
Yeah, young mothers not being able to feed their children. I think that, you know, that is the real cancel culture. Brands being held to account because they haven't got something right. That's an opportunity to get it right. So let's reframe that.
Agreed. So from our point of view as a talent agency, so we rep various progressive talents. When we're going into these kind of brand partnerships, we always want to have the conversations as early as possible and kind of mitigate any issues that we could have further down the line. And it's all so straightforward, really, but it's, I think it's a lot to do with the pressure that the marketers, brands, PRs are under to just, you know, so a lot of the time when we get reached out to, it's almost the last call that's happened in 6 months of planning. And I just think that's madness. If you know at that early point in the planning, you want to work with human beings as part of your promotional tool, you need to think about the human beings at the beginning of that conversation, start working out how it will look and why you want to work with those people, and not try and do a sort of square peg round hole thing at the end of all of that. So we have a lot of conversations about safeguarding measures, considering what happens if this goes wrong. What happens if the comment section suddenly looks like this when we announce we're doing this? Have we been communicative enough with the consumer about why we're working with this talent and what they're doing in this role? But I think also from a creative point of view, getting in there early and having open conversations about where you want something to go, tap into the talent, because they, you know, well, speaking on behalf of like our agency, we only work with people who have that really multi-hyphenated ability to sort of sit in a room with us, with a production company, with a Netflix, with marketers from a brand, and creatively work out, using their knowledge of the space of their communities and their understanding of those communities, which is obviously far greater usually than the person we're talking to at the brand, to kind of unlock the best way to carry that campaign out in a creative way. And I know it is a bit of an ongoing conversation, but like from where we sit, we still don't see a huge amount of change in how late we're kind of invited to the party. And then it's just about the money and the deliverables. And I think that's a little bit of a shame personally.
I think one of the issues that a lot of people don't necessarily recognize with progress and being brave is that you're not just reflecting reality and diversity when you champion and put marginalized talent from marginalized experiences and realities on stage, or give them an opportunity, or, you know, build a partnership. You're amplifying that person's reality. So you need to be prepared, and you need to understand that person's reality. You need to be prepared for the racism that they may incur. You may need to be prepared for the homophobia or transphobia that they may experience, and also understand, you know, how that will proliferate widely through the media. We all understand political leanings with the media, but you need to understand how, you know, say being a trans person in the UK, pretty much every single newspaper in the UK, unfortunately, especially The Telegraph, is extremely transphobic. Sorry, I couldn't let that one go. And it's about understanding that so that when things do happen, it's, you know, you're prepared. You're not just allowing it to happen and then kind of scrambling.
And that extra work, the bigger risk, if you like, you take, and that extra work is going to come back in dividends for you.
That's absolutely absolutely it's the roadmap forward, isn't it? It's understanding the terrain.
So what does a really successful, from you, from a talent's perspective, I know, because I'm an agent, I sort of say that we're talent. I do see Monroe as a human as well as talent, but the differentiation between us looking at it is one thing. But when you're there being booked to do something and working on some sort of global campaign, this is a multifaceted thing, what does a successful version of that really look like to you?
It's agency. It's building it with, like I said, building it with the team, tailoring what you're doing will take it to the next level. It will allow your campaign to connect with an audience on a level that is far more than the superficial. So that it's, you know, you need to touch on what's actually happening right now. And it separates, you know, we've seen so many brands work with diverse talent, talent from diverse backgrounds. But I really feel like what we were talking about the other day, what is the most effective is the on the ground partnerships, you know, plugging into actual communities, go deeper than the surface, go deeper than the visual, go deeper than the image. It's really about understanding what's happening within communities. And also looking at how you as brands or how you as execs can make that better. People don't just want to feel, people don't want to put something on and think, oh, well, I'm a better version of myself. I think people want to feel supported as they are, that this brand cares about my reality, whether or not that's, you know, community groups or whether or not that's having conversations that are extremely tough and that it's brave to have. We see year on year a new status quo be established, and things do very quickly become stale. What was revolutionary or radical at one point quickly becomes a stereotype. So it's constantly keeping your finger on the pulse as to what that community needs to push things forward, rather than getting stuck on saying the same thing and doing the same thing all the time, because then it just reinforces a new expectation or a new standard that is that will quite quickly become stagnant.
And marketers for years have tried to tap into communities, right, to engage them in whatever the products they're selling. And with the advent of social media, you can do that sort of so much more readily. How we look at it from our position as well is that you're not just buying into a talent because of their celebrity status or because they pull off a look. They are experts in their communities, in their wants and needs. They might not agree with every single version of what that looks like, but they're aware of it because they've been living that through their lived experience, but also because day-to-day socializing, friend groups, work, it just spreads out into an understanding that no one can just come and sort of read a quick report on and get what they need. So we try to, like, we consult as a company, but we also encourage our talent to view themselves as consultants for these brands as well. Maybe you want to talk to a celebrity about the community they're in way before you want to talk about putting them on the front on a billboard. I think that could be, on the campaigns we worked on where that has been considered, they've been the most successful by quite a long way, because it's just that communication is so much better. How do you define wokeness? And how can brands work with purpose-led creators in and around that as a thing and make it successful and I guess embrace wokeness in purpose-led brand activations?
I mean, personally, I don't think of wokeness as a thing. I just kind of feel like it's progress. I mean, I think of yes, it does have a definition. And yes, it again, it's very similar to what I was speaking about before, is, you know, things becoming stale or becoming appropriated by people who have a vested interest in keeping things the same. So, you know, trans rights quickly becomes gender ideology. You know, being progressive and inclusive quickly becomes wokeness. You know, feminism quickly becomes, you know, kind of panic with men in charge. And I don't know, I think that wokeness is often talked about by people who don't need it. You know, we see it on the front pages of magazines written by people who don't feel the urgency for things to change. So I think really when listening to or participating in conversations about wokeness, it's really dependent on who's having that conversation. If you're seeing it on breakfast television, it's often in a sensationalist with a sensationalist slant. But ultimately, I just think of it as the world that we want to live in. You know, we want to feel like we live in a world where everybody feels seen, everyone feels safe, everyone feels like they are respected. And for me, that's all that is. It's a seat at the table for everybody. And it's just a shame that there's often so many conversations about how that's a bad thing, how, you know, it's making the world uncomfortable for people, and like, for who and why?
Yeah.
And why do you feel uncomfortable? And who is it making uncomfortable?
Yeah.
So I think we should really, you know, spend our time deconstructing that,
yeah,
and double down.
Yeah, well, it's like you mentioned, or one of us Gen Zers earlier, like that generation are, I'm not sure they want to use the phrase woke, but they're proud to be what woke means, right? That scrutiny they put across the brands that they tap into, what they watch, where they buy, who they talk to, who their friendship groups are, even what platforms they choose to share their life on, is all because of the wokeness, in that they understand the world probably better than our generations did.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
almost embarrassing to see that conversation roll out, though. You know, the people that think that something is woke, I mean, they don't understand like what is happening. It's resisting change ultimately. If you're anti-woke, then you're resisting change. And that is kind of painful to see, because it's on the other side of that is a world where we don't go to war unnecessarily, where brands are much more clear with their intentions. There's much more, it's a better world ultimately. And why wouldn't we want that, unless you've got a vested interest in keeping things the same because it's beneficial financially too, in which case those people are outing themselves right now. And we should pay attention to that. We should look at who is talking about progress in a way which is inclusive and exciting and respectful and open, because there's so many different kinds of ways to be a human being in this world, and everybody deserves to be respected. Or the people who are just shutting down conversations and dismissing them as not real or woke or too far. So yeah, I really feel like the world is somewhat splitting open, and we should pay attention to who is allowing it to thrive.
Yeah. Okay, we've got 1 minute and 10 seconds, 9 seconds.
Quick.
Last question then. Are given everything you've just said,
I can't even remember what I just said.
All right, we'll watch it back afterwards. Are brands going far enough?
Yes and no. I think that we can always go further. When it comes down to change, there has to be somebody that's willing to put their head above the parapet. I think a lot of people want to be part of change and want to be part of the conversation. But who's going to set the new standard? Who's going to be that person to launch a campaign or a partnership that stops the world in its tracks and really people look back in history and be like, that was a moment of change?
Colin Kaepernick and Nike, for example.
Exactly. You know, stand behind the movement before the movement becomes the new normal. Show that bravery, because I really believe that communities that need it and the world will look back and be like, that is a force for good in the world. And it's the forces for good that Gen Z, the future world leaders of this world, are going to want to invest in. If you're not a force for good in this world, time's really ticking.
Yeah. Good answer. Our time's run out, but we will be around for the next couple of hours if anyone wants to talk to us. I'm sure here or there's a marketers meetup or something. But thank you very, very much for listening to us. And thanks, Monroe.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.